Whoever was doing the shooting had certainly emptied the magazine in those few seconds. And now Peter bobbed up in his seat, slitting his eyes against the cloud of glass splinters. He saw a looming nightmare of dark hedges and spun the wheel back to hold the Maserati. She swayed to the limits of her equilibrium, and Peter had a glimpse of the two gunmen in the road, rolling frantically into the half-filled ditch. But at that moment, his off-rear wheel hit the lip, and he was slammed up short against his safety belt, with a force that drove the air from his lungs, and the Maserati reared like a stallion smelling the mare, and tail-walked, swinging in short, vicious surges, back and forth across the road, as he desperately fought for control with gear and brake and wheel. He must have spun full circle, Peter realized, for there was a giddy dazzle of light beams and of running and rolling figures, everything hazy and indistinct in the rain. Then the open road ahead again, and he sent the car at it with a great howling lunge, at the same moment glancing up at his mirror. In the headlights, he saw the burnt blue clouds of smoke and steam thrown up by his own tyres, and through it the figure of the second gunman, obscured from the waist by the ditch. He had the machine pistol at his waist, and the muzzle flash bloomed about him. Peter heard the first burst hit the Maserati, and he could not duck again, for there was a bend ahead in the rain, coming up at a dazzling speed, and he clenched his jaws, waiting for it. The next burst hit the car, like the sound of hail on a tin roof, and he felt the rude, tugging, numbing jerk in his upper body. Tagged, he realized. There was no mistaking it. He'd been hit before. The first time when he led a patrol into an Aoka ambush a very long time ago, and at the same moment he was evaluating the hit calmly, finding he still had use of both hands and all his senses. Either it was a ricochet, or the bullet had spent most of its force in penetrating the rear windshield and seat back. The Maserati tracked neatly into the bend, and only then he felt the engine surge and falter. Almost immediately, the sharp stink of gasoline filled the cab of the Maserati. Fuel line, he told himself, and there was the warm, uncomfortable spread of his own blood down his back and side, and he placed his wound low in the left shoulder. If it had penetrated, it would be a lung hit, and he waited for the coppery salt taste of blood in his throat, or the bubbling froth of escaping air in his chest cavity. The engine beat checked again, surged and checked, as it starved for fuel. That first traversing burst of automatic fire must have ripped through the engine compartment, and Peter thought wryly that in the movies the Maserati would have immediately erupted in spectacular pyrotechnics like a miniature Vesuvius, though in reality it didn't happen like that. Still, gasoline from the severed lead would be spraying over plugs and points. One last glance backwards before the bend hid it, and he saw three men running for the police van. Three men and the driver. That was lousy odds. They would be after him immediately, and the crippled machine made a final brave leap forward that carried them 500 yards more, and then it died. Ahead of him, at the limits of the headlight beam, Peter saw the white gates of La Pierre Benete. They had set the ambush at the point where they could screen out most extraneous traffic and gather only the silver Maserati in their net. He cast his mind back swiftly, recalling the lie of the land beyond the main gates of the estate. He had been here only once before, and it had been dark then also, but he had the soldier's eye for ground, and he remembered thick forest on both sides of the road, down to a low bridge over a narrow, fast-flowing stream with steep banks, a hard left-hander and a climb up to the house. The house was half a mile beyond the gates, a long way to go with a body hit and at least four armed men following, and no guarantee that he would be safe there either. The Maserati was coasting down the slight incline towards the gates, slowing as it ran out of momentum. And now there was the hot smell of oil and burning rubber. The paintwork of the engine hood began to blister and discolour. Peter switched off the ignition to stop the electric pump spraying more fuel onto the burning engine, and he slipped his hand into his jacket. He found the wound where he had expected it, low and left. It was beginning to sting, and his hand came away sticky and slick with blood. He wiped it on his thigh. Behind him was the reflected glow of headlights in the rain, a halo of light growing stronger. At any moment, they would come through the bend, and he opened the glove compartment. The 9mm Cobra gave some little comfort as he slipped it from its holster and thrust it into the front of his belt. There was no spare magazine, and the breech was empty, a safety consideration which he now regretted, for it left him with only 9 rounds in the magazine. One more might make a lot of difference. Pretty little fingers of bright flame were waving at him from under the bonnet of the engine compartment, finding the hinge and joint, probing the ventilation slot on the top surface. Peter released his seatbelt, held open the door, and steered with his other hand for the verge. Here the road was banked and dropped away steeply. He flicked the wheel back the opposite way and let the change of direction eject him neatly, throwing him clear, while the Maserati swerved back into the centre of the road and rolled away, slowing gradually. He landed as though from a parachute drop, feet and knees together, cushioning the impact, and then rolled into it. Pain flared in his shoulder, and he felt something tear. He came up in a crouch and ran doubled over for the edge of the woods, and the burning auto lit the dark trees with flickering orange light. The fingers of his left hand felt swollen and numb as he pumped around into the chamber of the Cobra, and at that moment the headlights beyond the bend flared with shocking brilliance, and Peter had the illusion of being caught in front stage centre of the Palladium. He went down hard on his belly in the soft, rain-sodden earth, but still his wound jarred, and he felt the warm trickle of blood running under his shirt as he crawled desperately for the tree line. The police van roared down the stretch of road. Peter flattened and pressed his face to the earth, and it smelt of leaf mould and fungus. The van roared past where he lay. 300 yards down the road, the Maserati had coasted to a halt. 2 wheels still on the road, the offside wheels over the verge, so she stood at an abandoned angle, burning merrily. The van pulled up at a respectful distance from it, aware of the danger of explosion, and a single figure, a gendarme in his plastic cape, ran forward, took one look into the cab, and shouted something. The language sounded like French, but the flames were beginning to drum fiercely, and the range too long to hear clearly. The van locked into a U-turn, bumped over the verge, and then started back slowly. The 2 erstwhile accident victims, still carrying their machine pistols, running ahead like hounds on leash, one on each side of the road, heads down as they searched for signs in the soft shoulders of the road. The white-caped gendarme rode on the running board of the van, calling encouragement to the hunters. Peter was up again, doubled over, heading for the edge of the forest, and he ran into the barbed wire fence at full stretch. It brought him down heavily. He felt the slash of steel through the cloth of his trousers, and as he gathered himself again he thought bitterly, 170 guineas. The suit had been tailored in Savile Row. He crawled between the strands of armed wire, and there was a shout behind him. They had picked up his spoor, and as he dodged across the last few yards of open ground, another, sharper, more jubilant shout. They had spotted him in the towering firelight of the blazing Maserati, and again there was the tearing rip of automatic fire. But it was extreme range for the short barrel and low-velocity ammunition. Peter heard passing shot like a whisper of bat's wings in the darkness above him, and then he reached the first trees and ducked behind one of them. He found he was breathing deeply, but with a good, easy rhythm. The wound wasn't handicapping him yet, and he was into the cold, reasoning rage that combat always instilled in him. The range to the barbed wire fence was 50 metres. He judged it was one of his best distances, international pistol standard out of hand with a 50mm X circle. But there were no judges out here, and he took a double-handed grip and let them run into the fence, just as he had done. It brought two of them down, and the cries of angry distress were definitely in French. As they struggled to their feet again, they were precisely backlit by the flames, and the Cobra had a luminous foresight. Peter went for midsection of one of the machine gunners. The 9mm had a vicious whip-crack report, and punched into flesh and bone with 385 foot-pounds of energy. The strike of the bullet sounded like a watermelon hit with the full swing of a baseball bat. It lifted the man off his feet and threw him backwards, and Peter swung into the next target. But they were pros. Even though the fire from the edge of the woods had come as a complete surprise, they reacted instantly and disappeared flat against the dark earth. They gave him no target, and Peter was too low on ammunition to throw down holding fire. One of them fired a burst of automatic, and it tore bark and wood and leaves along the edge of the trees. Peter fired at the muzzle flash only once as a warning, and then ducked away, and keeping his head down to avoid lucky random fire, sprinted back into the woods. They would be held up for 2 or 3 minutes by the fence, and by the threat of coming under fire again, and Peter wanted to open some ground between them during that time. The glow of the burning Maserati kept him well orientated, and he moved quickly towards the river. However, before he had covered 2 yards, he was starting to shiver uncontrollably. His two-piece city suit was soaked by the persistent drizzle and by the shower from each bush he brushed against. His shoes were light calf leather with leather soles, and he had stepped in puddles of mud, and the knee-high grass was sodden. The cold struck through his clothing. He could feel his wound stiffening agonizingly, and the first nauseating grip of shock tightened his belly. But he paused every 50 yards or so and listened for sounds of pursuit. Once he heard the sound of a car engine from the direction of the road, passing traffic probably, and he wondered what they would make of the abandoned police vehicle and the blazing Maserati. Even if it was reported to the real police, it would be all over before a patrol arrived, and Peter discounted the chance of assistance from that quarter. He was beginning now to be puzzled by the total lack of any sign of further pursuit, and he looked for, and found, a good stance in which to wait for it. There was a fallen oak tree, and he wriggled in under the trunk. With a clear avenue of retreat, good cover, and a low position from which any pursuer would be silhouetted against the sky glow of the burning Maserati. There were only 3 pursuers now, and 7 cartridges in the Cobra. If it were not for the cold and the demoralizing ache through his upper body, he might have felt more confident, but the nagging terror of the hunted animal was still on him. He waited 5 minutes, lying completely still, every sense tuned to its finest. The Cobra held out in extended double grip, ready to roll left or right and take the shot as it came. There was no sound, but the drip and plop of the rain-soaked woods. Another 10 minutes passed before it occurred to him, suddenly, that the pursuers must now realize that the wrong quarry had sprung their trap. They were setting for Magda Altman, and it must be clear to them that they had a man, and an armed one at that. He pondered their reaction. Almost certainly they would pull out now, had already done so. Instead of a lady worth $20 or $30 million in ransom money, they must realize they had one of her employees, probably an armed bodyguard, who was driving the Maserati either as a decoy or merely as delivery driver. Yes, he decided, they would pull out, take their casualty and melt away. And Peter was sure they would leave no clues to their identity. He would have enjoyed the opportunity to question one of them, he thought, and grimaced at a new lance of pain in the shoulder. He waited another 10 minutes, utterly still and alert, controlling the spasms of cold and reaction that shook him. Then he rose quietly and moved back towards the river. The Maserati must have burned out completely now, for the sky was black again, and he had to rely on his own sense of direction to keep orientated. Even though he knew he was alone, he paused every 50 yards to listen and look. He heard the river at last. It was directly ahead and very close. He moved a little faster and almost walked off the bank in the dark. He squatted to rest for a moment, for the shoulder was very painful now, and the cold was draining his energy.